Welcome to the Channel 9 at Microsoft Build 2018. I'm Bruno Borges, part of the Cloud Developer Advocacy Team for Java Developers at Azure. And I'm here with Richard from Pivotal, James Governor from RedMonk, and Asir from Microsoft to talk about all things Java and Spring.
Of course.
Richard, I want to talk to Governor first and just check on how these Java evolution is boarding again.
Great. So I think one of the things we've seen, if we look at the industry, one of the things that's interesting is we tend to write technologies off perhaps a little bit too early. It's a bit of a fashion industry. And certainly with Java, you think about these long time frames. I mean, even sort of 7 years ago, there's a bit of a Java's a dead end and this sort of thing. But what we've really seen is what I would call Java Renaissance. Really driven by the fact that some of the high-scale web companies have been making extensive use of Java in their operations. And so, I sometimes say that when web companies grow up, they turn into Java shops. There was a time like, oh yeah, we don't need all that. We're going to use Ruby now and build all this infrastructure on that. Well, we know how that went for Twitter and so on. So as we've seen, the web companies building microservices, if we look at a lot of the data infrastructure that we're all high on at the moment, again, a lot of Java. So, if we think of Spark, clearly that's Scala, but JVM language.
Yep.
And so overall, there's been, I would say, somewhat of a renaissance. And you combine that with recent governance changes, where finally it feels like Oracle, for some reasons, I think they don't want to be the sole steward anymore. So we've got a community opportunity now. The language is moving faster. We've got these 6-month cycles. Mm. At the end of the day, we've seen something that's slowed down, seemingly accelerating in some ways at the moment.
Yeah, it the way the Java language is quickly evolving right now, it also touched the point where Spring also was like evolving really fast all the time.
Right.
What's happening with Spring these days? And we all know developers want to do Spring Boot, but what else is in there?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I think the renaissance was not just the web companies using it, but that the framework came with it, right? That Netflix was doing things with Spring Cloud and bringing these cool resilience patterns in. And Spring keeps evolving in different integration spaces. So things like Spring Cloud Stream and connecting to Kafka or soon Event Hubs or RabbitMQ and actually making it easier to connect to data sources. Now Cosmos DB is a plugin. Then it's about how are these frameworks evolving so I can not just do cool resilience things, but what Spring's known for, which is almost, yes, it's a dependency injection Java framework, but it's also about integrating a lot of different things into your code to make it easier, right? Get rid of all the boilerplate stuff. That's where Spring Boot is great. I don't want to build pages of XML docs to describe things. Infer stuff, do smart defaults. And that's seemingly just helping devs crank out better apps and not spending so much time setting up projects and coming up with unique ways to do logging or failover or circuit breakers. I don't know, that seems like that's really helped usher this in where you've simplified the hard stuff.
And how Pivotal sees the faster pace of evolution of Java and how Pivotal might combine that also with its frameworks?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we want to make Spring Boot run great on Pivotal Cloud Foundry, kind of our core place. We work with Microsoft a ton to make sure Spring Boot runs great on Azure natively at the same time. So we want to make sure, whether it's Cloud Foundry, whether it's our Cloud Cache, whether it's RabbitMQ, whether it's all these things that Pivotal's helped create, Spring Boot feels first class, because again, I just want to kind of get the software and the infrastructure out of the way so I can crank out something that solves a problem.
And speaking of Azure, Asir, you've been working with the engineering team in Pivotal to make not only Java on Azure a great technology and provide first class support, but also Spring. We know VS Code support, we know some Azure services have out-of-the-box runtimes.
So we have been working with Pivotal. We have been working with Pivotal to bring Spring on Azure with some rich integration of those Spring modules. Even if you, when the developers, when they start scaffolding the project, they start from start.spring.io. If you go there, you would see Azure. So we are trying to help them get a head start right from there. If you're using VS Code, developers love it because it's super fast and the way it understands the code. Even there, they can go there and just start scaffolding their projects, and they can go through the same experience that they would see in start.spring.io, and they can do it. The other thing is we are also exploring with Pivotal richer integration like the config server, the cloud data stream, the Spring Cloud functions, how they can natively interact with Azure services, just to make so that developers can build scalable Spring apps on Azure in a very productive, in a quick manner. Yeah.
And James, when you see tooling support like that, from desktop tools like VS Code, and also server side on VSTS, automation from end to end, what else can people and Microsoft do together to help Java developers actually be productive?
Well, I think one of the things is clearly the sort of automation, technical integration we're talking about. Anytime you can get out of the way so the developer doesn't have to shift context, and they can stay in the environment they're in order to get the task done, that's super helpful. But I think further to that, I mean, one of the things that clearly Pivotal has that literally it's is really unique is the Pivotal Labs function, where an organization that wants to start doing Cloud Java and Spring, it's like, what does testing culture mean? What does pair programming mean? And what is the skew for digital transformation where it's like, I know that I need to develop more apps quickly, I'm under this pressure to do it, and they need to be better quality, so I need to understand testing. There are just not many options available. So I think that from a joint engagement perspective, that's probably some of the places where they should jointly invest, because Pivotal is somewhat unique, but obviously, how do they scale that? So can Microsoft begin to invest in some of that stuff? Like what would that look like in practice? Because as I say, there isn't enterprises just need help. They know they need to make the transformation, but who are you going to call? So I think that's an opportunity actually. That sort of the engagement almost from a services learning training perspective, and that's where I think extra investments might pay dividends.
Yeah, I mean, right, just cloud-native Java alone is not enough, right? At your point, it's, am I doing test coverage? Am I putting my apps on pipelines? Are they running in a place that I get feedback and then can iterate and make the project better? So, it's great to have the tooling. It's great to have the great place to run it. But if I'm not learning and building better software, none of this really matters. So hopefully that's a nice mix. I know we've been working a lot with Microsoft to make sure that you have the right packaging, and RedMonk's done you've been preaching this for years. I don't know if everyone was listening, that like whoever packages the best wins, right? Whoever makes things simpler and doesn't make me choose all of these random defaults and try to pull it together, but just help me get started, bring in smart things, and then help me focus on the real things that matter, which is building user-centric, important software. I think if we can pull that off, then that just means devs get more work done and operators spend less time fiddling with machines and more time automating things.
So a good example, it'd be interesting to see VSTS, how can that work with Concourse? So from a CI perspective, obviously you built Concourse, you're getting some momentum there. Now it's not that VSTS doesn't have its own CI functionality, but you're going to have customers that might want to use both. Plenty of integration work to be done, I reckon.
Yeah, no, we have a long backlog for Osir. <so. laughs> Good.
I think you'll be busy after Build.
That's right.
Yeah, definitely. We have lots of engineering activities going on between the two companies. In addition to that, there are some soft things that James just mentioned, right? So we also have reaching out to developers jointly, like a webinar. We also have Azure PCF joint workshops. Right. We also had a boot camp with how to build cloud native apps on Azure using PCF, right? So these kind of joint activities are there so we can reach out to developers. They know what they can get from the joint activity that we are working on as
a company.
Well, I was going to say, and we're also only one of a couple companies that Microsoft has bidirectional support with. So if you call up Microsoft with a problem with PCF on Azure, they answer the question, they proxy it. Same if you call Pivotal. And that just, it's maybe underrated, but Microsoft doesn't do that very often. And
it's
that
a
just
very important thing.
I want to get rid of friction. Right, I'm just trying to build stuff and not deal with ping-ponging back and forth between vendors.
And then I was going to mention the documentation that's provided about Spring and Cloud Foundry on Microsoft documentation website.
Yes.
So,
which is surprisingly good. I mean, I'll admit, as someone who almost accidentally discovered the Spring on Azure pages a month or two ago, there's actually a lot here. Like, I didn't realize the depth that was being documented there, which was impressive. I mean, there's as much Java documentation on the Azure side as you'll find on, some of the former stewards of Java. So you can see that Microsoft's serious about this.
Yeah, on we saw on the keynote on Monday, Donovan Brown showing the creation of a Java project. Mm. So Microsoft built a keynote, and you have a developer advocate showing how to create a Spring Boot
project. First, a bigger shout out. Like, not just a developer advocate, the developer advocate. Donovan Brown is amazing. That guy's so great.
And
he rubbed some DevOps on it, man.
Exactly. And he showed this really cool DevOps project creation that goes end-to-end. It provides a Spring sample. It builds Docker images. It deploys on Azure App Service, CI/CD out of the box.
Right.
And you put that code into VS Code, and you're ready to go. Do you feel the level of support can get any better for developers?
I mean, I guess it always can, but as Andrew Clay Schaefer from Pivotal likes to say, you want that mean time to dopamine to be super short. And we've done a good job between start.spring.io integration and Visual Studio Code. Like, I don't have to leave the editor to build a new project, compile it, push it to Azure App Service, push it to Cloud Foundry, whatever, check it into Git so it kicks off a pipeline. Like, it's getting better and better there. I mean, DevOps isn't a thing you buy, it's a way you work. So I don't really DevOps something as much as hopefully it just facilitates now developers taking more responsibility for building resilient stuff all the way through the production, not just handing off code somewhere else. And now you can actually kick off a pipeline or get it through a flow. So I think as we get more visibility into that, helping devs troubleshoot this stuff more, I like when Oster showed off, even when I debug a Java app in code now, a Spring back, like I can mouse over and I can see state. I can do some real-time smart debugging. So as long as that stuff keeps getting better and we pinpoint problems faster in Azure App Service or PCF on Azure, we can keep getting better. But man, is there some crazy momentum on this right now? It's impressive stuff.
It will be really interesting to see if Java begins to find a place in code, because code has obviously been so popular with modern languages. The Go community is all over it. JavaScript is a great editor. We're just seeing more and more momentum for code. But obviously, the Java world has been a bit more traditionally IDE-based. So it'll be quite interesting to see if it finds a place in that community.
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I do see people inside Pivotal who build Spring using code. And so it is something that, you know, our own team likes using itself, and the plugins now are pretty impressive. So
yeah, well, what we hear from Java developers about VS Code is they love that it's so super light and the way it understands the code. And as they are bringing in a mix of like Maven file, Gradle file, and Java file, and Java's, how it recognizes each of them as separate and how it highlights and helps you, they just love it. And that's one of the reasons why they're falling over and start using VS Code. Yeah.
Yeah,
I noticed that I was just talking to a friend before coming here. He's a Java developer. He used IntelliJ for his Java code and Spring Boot, by the way.
He makes good choices.
There you go. Still not deploying on Azure, but just
nobody's perfect.
We just wait. But he used VS Code for JavaScript. And I said, you know, give it a shot. And he will try. I'll show it to you guys what he has to say. But I'm starting to see these developers using two or maybe three tools, because they're using the best tool for the job.
Right.
The thing that we are trying to also do with VS Code is, okay, we got these extensions, the right extension for the job. So it's one single tool, but all the extensions, they provide different values. Mm-hmm. You don't have to use all of them all the time. So it's a good mix of support there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the microservices ethos comes to products, right? As much as I have Visual Studio for Mac, Eclipse, and Visual Studio Code on my desktop, like I like that code's a little more composable, right? Just like a microservices app, do I want to deploy the monolith and even Visual Studio? Do I want the 4 gig install, or do I just want like code and then add a few plugins, keep it light and focused, and only add what I need?
Yeah.
So I like that trend in Azure services, right? Not like one database that does everything. Like different data services, different messaging services. It's more work for a dev now because you can't just be lazy and say, I'm going to use this and this, and that's my stack, or this is just my IDE. But I kind of like the choice that gets, I don't know, a little more lightweight.
And VS Code is a polyglot tool. Azure is a polyglot cloud. Cloud Foundry is a polyglot runtime.
Right.
And we are also seeing Java developers moving to other languages in the JVM. We see a lot of trend on Kotlin and Spring.
So there are about three languages when they come to VS Code, particularly Java developers, that they really like it. It's the combination of SQL, HTML and JavaScript, and Java. So this is how when they are playing in VS Code, they find it very easy because they can go from one to another very quickly in a super light manner.
And James, what do you see like about language popularity?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think the technology adoption in general, it tends to be sort of a saturation curve. Mm. The way things work these days, it you know, things sort of move along, they get a few people excited, and then when they hit adoption, they really boost up, and then it begins to plateau. Now, you know, over the past sort of few years that we've been doing the RedMonk programming language rankings, you know, it is a bit, we've seen some languages move fairly quickly, but there's also been a lot of stability. Mm-hmm. So up at the top, you know, we've got Java and JavaScript. That's very, very consistent. Now, where have we seen a lot of movement? You know, things like Swift, that was a very fast trajectory, but then it began to actually slow down. I mean, they do. But interesting, you mentioned Kotlin. I think for a lot of developers, they like the syntax of Kotlin. You know, there's a lot of folks that are like, okay, we like this. And of course, now that Android has said actually Kotlin is you know a top tier language, it sort of begins to make a lot more sense. So the idea of you know, something isomorphic, something that we can do the client side, something that we can also do the back end functionality. It's terse, elegant. So Kotlin, we've seen you know some interesting growth. But you know, Go was another one that was somewhat explosive, but over time they slow down. I mean, there's right. You know, the world developer population is growing and growing quite quickly, but by the same token, I think we get these saturation effects. But yeah, I think Kotlin is definitely one to watch.
Mm. Interesting, and we I think we have already a Kotlin extension for VS Code that you have the syntax, code highlight, something like that.
I think so. We have it for VS Code. Also, we have some prototypes done for the function as well. So we're also trying it out to see how it runs. Yeah, mm-hmm. Kotlin is another interesting one to always watch out.
And speaking of functions, let's talk about serverless then. And Richard, I know Pivotal has a project called Pivotal Cloud Functions, or Spring Cloud Functions.
We have Spring Cloud Functions.
Spring Cloud Functions.
As a Java framework, yeah. So how are you building, you know, Java apps that are more friendly to, you know, quick startup and shutdown? But the Spring piece is nice because you can still bring in the Spring syntax and dependencies if you want to, right? For different Spring projects, and that we've made that run on Azure Functions now, and then Pivotal Function Service will be coming shortly, which is a function platform that would run on every cloud, public or private. So, yeah, I mean, it's just the right sort of runtime for the right sort of app, right? There's going to be that Java app that should respond to a trigger and some event change in some system or a data change event and spin up a Java function, do some work, and shut down. Or you might be processing a stream of data, whatever that makes sense. And some things really do deserve a server that sits there and runs, and I want a servlet model or a reactive app. So I like that the choice is there, right? It's not like let's cram every sort of app into one delivery model and runtime. You should kind of be choosing the right thing for the right place.
And Asir, on Azure Functions, the Java support that we have, I know we can connect to Cosmos DB and SQL Server and call REST APIs, but what else is in there?
Yeah.
So as you write the functions, right, you can connect to many of the event sources. The ones that are very popular among developers are Storage, Cosmos DB, Service Bus, and Event Hub, right? And recently, developers are also asking for Event Grid, right? So those are the ones that are very popular. So they can write Java functions, they can deploy it, they can bind it, right? So when they are writing this code, one thing that you will realize is they don't have to worry about connecting. They don't have to worry about getting the data. All of them are magically fed in. You only have to worry about that small piece of business logic.
Right.
I also want to add that when we went to Spring One, we worked with the Pivotal team. So we demonstrated at Spring One how to take a Spring Cloud function and use the developer experience that Azure has, and you can deploy to Azure. So we demonstrated that, and currently we are looking at, with the Pivotal team, what are the details, right? When we bring in like sophisticated input bindings, triggers, output bindings, how do we make that happen with Spring Cloud Function? So a Spring Boot developer who's using Spring Cloud Function can take the scale and the automation that we have in Azure, and they can leverage it.
Yeah, that's great.
And James, your take on serverless?
Well, yeah. I mean, so serverless is obviously a huge phenomenon. You know, within that AWS world, you know, gluing together the events and functions within, that has been compelling. I mean, you know, funnily enough, it's like a mod in the sort of the, frankly, just it's like, you know, what's the on-ramp? Cron jobs, right? You know, it's just like, you know, it's right. Just a discrete thing that you don't want running all the time. But I think what becomes more interesting actually is the convergence that we're now seeing between events and serverless. I think that's where things get interesting, where you've got something on-prem and it triggers something that's happening in one cloud and then it hits your SAP function. So last week at KubeCon, we had the Cloud Event Spec launch. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think we've got, you know, Event Hub, which is now supporting Kafka, so you can have Kafka without having to worry about Zookeeper and VMs and all sorts of stuff like that. Once you can begin to trigger events and you have a programming model that integrates, I would say, event-driven programming with the sort of serverless and functions as a service kind of thinking, things are going to get a lot more interesting. Because for me, it's you know, serverless is interesting within one cloud, but I think as it begins to hit other applications, other clouds, trigger events on-prem, that's when we're going to see much more interesting applications being built.
Yeah, well, it's a bright future.
James, thank you so much for your time. Asir, thank you for being here and sharing all the stuff that you have for Java developers on Azure. And Richard, thank you so much for your partnership with Microsoft and making sure Spring is also first-class citizen on Azure and for all the integration that we've been working on.
Oh, we're looking forward to having you on as a keynoter at
Spring One. Oh, exactly. So in Washington.
It all comes together.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.